We are live. Hey everyone. How are you, Michael?
Doing really good. How are you doing?
Excellent, excellent. So, we have a question from Hugo, and I picked some comments from John Monk that I think are really good ones, important to talk about. And what was I going to say? Yes, actually, as we look, it's interesting. We can actually talk about this now, Michael. We've talked about doing these kind of like workshops, right? Mm-hmm. And I think that could be really, really helpful, particularly for someone who is like, well, just wants to learn. Who is somebody who just wants to learn something very specific, but also somebody who's maybe thinking about joining our self-coaching master program and wants to kind of get a taste of what that would be like. Mm-hmm. And what I'm envisioning is something like a, you know, 2-hour workshop or retreat or something like that, or maybe even mm-hmm. longer, mm-hmm. where we give a talk and then answer questions, something like that. It would be something like, you know, $19. Just, I think there has to be some payment just to, for somebody to be like committed to it and so forth. But what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think things like that are really great ways for just an entry into the whole, into our whole school, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
And I just think it makes it maybe a little more approachable, a little less imposing, you know, people kind of wondering, well, what am I getting into here?
Exactly.
You know, this would be like a nice first step. In addition, we have the, you know, the videos at the school that anyone can access. There's a few of them there. But also this would be like maybe a next step after that. So, anyways, it's, I think it's a great idea. I really do. And I've done some live retreats, you know, a couple.
Oh, you have?
Yeah, in the past.
Oh, yeah, live, exactly. I'm in like 2020 now.
Yeah, I know.
When I hear live, I think like live, but yeah. It's actually real live.
Yeah. So, you know, and I mean, I've been around a long time. I got the gray hair, you know. So, you know, I've done a couple and they've always been really interesting. I just love connecting with people like that. Yeah. This day and age, at least the last year, it's been kind of not a thing. So I like just the idea, even now with like a virtual kind of retreat idea, workshop idea. I think that's really, really good. I think it's great, a great way to connect with people. So I'm super excited about that idea.
And yes, we got a live comment here from the Sleep Coach School, which is amazing. Which is, for anybody wondering, that's my wife. She has access to that account.
So. There we go.
All right, perfect. Well, yeah. I mean, I wanted to share this with everyone that this is just something that we've been talking about, but it kind of, you'll see why in a second here, because we have a great question for like so many reasons from Hugo, who's actually one of our current students in the Sleep Coach School. So let's read this. Hey, Daniel, Michael, I guess this is not your usual insomnia question, but a more philosophical one, something to tickle your brains just for the joy of it and perhaps sharpening our understanding. Let me start by saying how powerful I find the gas and brake analogy in terms of making insomnia so much more simple. It has helped me tremendously in my recovery process. However, I did start to wonder about the concept of hyperarousal being the primary concept as the brake. This happened when I was lying in bed during a meditation retreat. I was really, really calm. My body felt quite relaxed. However, there was a link to sleep, that wondering, will I sleep tonight? I was still hooked, or in what Daniel calls the state of addo, attachment to the outcome. In spite of the relaxation of my body, I ended up having a poor night. Of course, it can be argued that I was still in sort of hyper-aroused. But the point I really want to make is this. The real reason I didn't sleep is that I still have that connection to sleep. I'm in a state of addo. Probably almost always in a state goes together with being hyper-aroused. But the hyper-arousal is caused by the attachment. So my argument is that the real break is attachment to the outcome, addo. That's the prime, or attachment to sleep. That is the primary cause. Let's say my house is on fire and that makes me hyper aroused. Of course I wouldn't sleep, but neither would that be insomnia. It would be a healthy reaction. So in the context of insomnia, I think it could be helpful to view the break as addo instead of hyper arousal, because that it takes away any notion that you should be relaxed when going to bed, or that you should try to make yourself less hyper-aroused. These things are pointless, as hyper-arousal is not the real issue, so to speak. It makes it even more clear who the real culprit is and that only moving towards natto is really, and for anyone new here, natto is non-attachment to the outcome, is really going to help. Time to re-record all your videos, smiley. Only joking, of course. Just enjoy sharing my thoughts. And if this one is not suitable for open class, that's fine. Also, greetings, Hugo. It is very, very suitable for open class for many reasons. Firstly, it is fantastic. The deep understanding from Hugo here is fantastic. And I understand the question very, very well. And then as kind of this meta thing now, where Hugo is at a meditation retreat and he's also part of our school. So I think, you know, again, I thought it was just so timely because, again, this is for Hugo here who is on a retreat. We're actually thinking of doing these retreats. And by the way, one of the first things I thought we should do on a retreat was the gas and brake model. Do a whole retreat on the gas and brake model. It was just so much things that coalesced into this thing. But I pondered this one, and I think it's pretty clear to me what I think on this. But you know, what do you think, Michael, about Hugo's question?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks, Hugo. It's great.
Who's live with us, by the way?
Yeah. There you go. Hey, Hugo. Glad you're on. Really good questions there. I think, you know, great that, first of all, you recognize the gas brake model really simplifies insomnia, because insomnia, you know, it's not just a poor night of sleep. It's like an ongoing kind of struggle. So I'm really glad that you fully get that concept, right?
And actually, real quickly, Michael, sorry to interrupt, but I think we should, for somebody who's completely new here, just maybe quickly review gas and brake.
Sure. So, you know, you have two things going on with your sleep. You have your natural sleep drive, which builds while you're awake. We call that a homeostatic drive, if you're curious about the term. It's kind of like hunger, builds while you're awake. You know, just kind of you gradually get sleepier the longer you're awake. That's the primary sleep drive. And there's the circadian secondary one, but let's not get lost in the weeds on that. And then you have, so that's producing sleepiness. Wakefulness produces sleepiness. But then you have things that get in the way, things that slow you down as far as your sleep drive goes. And that's what we call the brake. So sleep drive, gas, things that get in the way or that limit your drive or they blunt your drive, whatever phrase you want to use, that's what we call brake, the brake side of it. And that is really like 98% of the education when someone's learning better sleep. That's what we talk about. We talk about the brake. Because that's usually what it boils down to. So brake can be just about anything, right? Efforts to sleep, probably, you know, one of the biggest breaks. And that can be like really insidious little things that you might not even be aware of that you're doing, or the way that you're thinking that you can somehow control your sleep. That's also like one of the biggest breaks. And that leads into, you know, the talk of hyperarousal, which, you know, and I don't know, did I explain the gas brake model? Do you have anything to add to that? Because you're
this is great. And just to summarize, exactly like Coach Michael says, the thing that makes us sleep is sleepiness, that comfort focus. And I summarize everything that is in the brake side as kind of like hyperarousal, heightened state of alertness. That's kind of the brake. So that was kind of my quick summary comments. But yeah, carry on, Michael.
Okay. So, you know, when I talk about, when I think of like hyperarousal, it doesn't necessarily mean like an observable visceral response or feeling like of complete tension where like your heart is racing. It doesn't necessarily mean that. It can, but it doesn't necessarily mean that. When people think of arousal, they think of like jittery, like, you know, oh, I've had 10 cups of coffee. I'm hyper arousal. My house is on fire. I'm hyper arousal. You know, that's true. But for when people like struggling with insomnia, a lot of times hyperarousal doesn't really manifest that way. It just simply manifests in like, it can be, and I think Hugo with your situation, I think, you know, you're talking about being really relaxed, very relaxed. So that whole like physiological, visceral kind of thing is not present. You're very calm and relaxed, but there's still something more, you know, something in your thinking. There's just like this little voice or something that maybe you're not even fully aware of that kind of can just like chime in a little bit. Like, oh, like, I wonder if I'll fall asleep.
Yeah, exactly.
I wonder if I'm going to fall asleep. And I think, Hugo, that's kind of my reaction to your email. I totally get what you're saying. And it's a little bit semantics too, right? Like we talk about hyperarousal, you talk about natto. it's kind of, we're almost like kind of talking about the same thing kind of in different ways. So it's sort of a semantic thing in my view. Completely, you know, NATO is like where you want to get to. That's like the destination. That's insomnia immunity, whatever phrase you want to use. That's like NATO. You don't care about how you sleep. You don't think about it. You don't focus on it. You don't give it any attention at all, ever. And that's NATO. So that's different than talking, a little bit different than talking about hyperarousal, which is kind of like a way to describe how, like, why is sleep difficult, I guess. What, you know, you, like, I'm doing all the right things, but I'm it's still challenging. It's difficult. Sleep is elusive. That's kind of like, in my language, that I talk about, like, that's hyperarousal, and it doesn't have to be full on visceral reaction. That's not what we're talking about. Usually when people struggle with insomnia, and deep thinkers like you, Hugo, I know you're very relaxed. I completely, you know, believe you are just like as calm and relaxed as it can be, but we want to like make sure there's not like a desire to sleep. There's not that little bit of voice in the back of your head kind of going on. That's my comment.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I think, absolutely. 100%. I think where you went, Michael, is to kind of summarize that for our audience here is that hyperarousal could be anything from a complete panic attack to something very, very subtle. But even that something subtle can be that break that keeps sleep from easily happening. But I think here's what I'm thinking. When I read Hugo's email, was that this one, that it is absolutely true that when the fire alarm goes off, you should be very hyper aroused. There's absolutely no problem with that. That's what should happen. And the problem with insomnia is when you are attached, you're instead of attachment to sleep, you want to sleep, and that causes hyperarousal, but hyperarousal itself is not the problem. So what Hugo's saying is like hyperarousal is not necessarily a problem. It's what causes that, which is the attachment that is the problem. And here's the thing. Here's what it boils down to for Hugo is that if you would use the gas and brake model as a model to explain insomnia, that is correct. We should replace hyperarousal with attachment to the outcome. Yes, that is correct. But if you use the gas and brake model as a general model for sleep physiology and just explain how sleep works, then I think it makes sense to keep hyperarousal as the brake. And again, just to clarify this even more, is to say that the gas and brake model is just, it just explains how sleep works, but it doesn't explain insomnia. And so I think that's my explanation to Hugo. I hope it made sense. So that's my conclusion there. But Hugo, if it didn't make sense, then please come back, because I love this question, because it really showed so much understanding of this.
Yeah, exactly. And then just really quick, Hugo, that's the big picture here, is that you get it. Like it's a little bit of a semantics thing going on here. And so, you know, you fully understand how insomnia happens and keeps going and perpetuates. Like, that's the key. You understand that. That's, you are a very well educated person in sleep. And so that's the main thing in my mind.
100%. Now we have a live question here, a good one. And I remember this is Meshkat from Iran, who has a, you know, there's this sound that's keeping Meshkat from sleeping. And I don't know if it's he or she. I think it's he based on the picture, but I'm just going to say he said, how to cope with a fan-like sound that can't turn off coming from a nearby neighbor. I listened to Talking Insomnia 37, as you told, and it didn't help, you know? And by the way, Talking Insomnia 37 is when I talked to Joe from Malaysia, who started having trouble sleeping when this I think it's called minaret, when they, you know, the Allah Akbar, you know, that sound become really loud, and that disrupted his sleeping. So here's the thing, whenever you hear yourself, anyone out there, whenever you hear yourself say, I tried this and it didn't help, that is a huge clue. That is a huge and important clue. Whenever you think it didn't help or it didn't work, that means you were doing something that you hoped would make you sleep. You listened to Talking Song number 37 because you hoped it would make you sleep, or somehow you hoped it would lead to you sleeping more. And whenever you do anything with the intent of making yourself sleep, it becomes an effort. The more you try to sleep, the less sleep you get. And I think that is the most important, actually, learning point from this question. Really, what do you think, Michael?
I completely agree. It's intent, right? You know, you when you do something for with the intent of sleep, it will backfire. You might think it works initially, and I've heard a lot over the years, you know, just endless things that people do or ingest or they wear or they think or whatever. They're trying specific things to initiate sleep, and it always backfires at some point.
And
you know,
if you
be like a big placebo effect in the beginning, like you can believe something, and then it's like I believe these earbuds help me sleep, you know, and if I really believe that, I might get a couple of nights of I have slept pretty good, and then I'm not going to sleep well, and I'm like, well, do I have the right kind of earbuds, or do I put them in the right way? Like maybe I should adjust, and that's just such the slippery slope. You don't want to go down that slope.
100%. And so you know, to just share something that may be more helpful for Meshkat is that. If you listen to Joe's story, is that Joe realized it wasn't the minaret, it wasn't the neighbors that were the problem, it was his reaction to it, how he didn't want to hear it, he didn't want to be awake, etc. And that always that leads you forward. It's always where when you get to a point where like, okay, I can't do anything about the fan-like sound. I cannot change the neighbor's fan, you know, and it's causing me disruptive sleep. But I can change how I think about it. I can be more okay with being awake at night. I can be more willing to hear that, you know? And then, you know, good things start coming away. So let us know how that goes, of course.
Yep. Thank you, Meshkat.
Cool. Now, let's keep going here. There were two comments from John that I thought were really good. This is a comment on that recent success story I posted yesterday. As always, great video. May I ask how possible it is for a person who suffered from insomnia to now suffer from paradoxical insomnia? Question number one. I think I'm sleeping reasonably well, but I still feel tired during the day, especially midday. But what's bothering me is feeling that something just seems off, like I'm in a sleep-deprived state, sense of grogginess when I get up from bed as I get on with my day. I'm not sure if this is because I'm naturally like this. I maybe just didn't notice it before because I wasn't thinking about it or connecting to sleep. Or am I not sleeping enough? Is this common? What is a natural sleeper, basically? Am I already a natural sleeper by now? Question mark. I just don't know. So the questions are, okay, how common is it to go from kind of insomnia, paradoxical insomnia? What's this feeling off groggy during the day about? Is that evidence that I'm not sleeping enough? Is it common? What is a natural sleeper? Am I already that? I just don't know. Couple of questions there. You want to start with addressing a couple of these?
Sure. You know, paradoxical insomnia, you know, kind of that feeling that you haven't slept when you have, it's really common. Again, it kind of, it's an experience that a lot of people with insomnia have, and it can be really frustrating. You know, because you don't get that restorative feeling, that, you know, it's kind of like the sleep drive is there because you are sleeping. But then you feel like it's not restorative because again, there's like that thinking comes in, that hyper arousal that we were just talking about. You know, when people wake up, I think this is a big part of it. When people wake up at night, they think something is wrong. And as a sleep coach, you know, that's one of my big messages is it is normal to wake up at night, completely normal. It would be really, really abnormal if you didn't wake up at all. Like if you honestly were sleeping for like 7 hours and didn't wake up at all until the end, I'd be like, go see your doctor. That's like not normal, but you don't perceive. Good sleepers don't perceive waking up at night. They don't think about it. Or when they do wake up to like roll over, they don't engage with themselves. They're just kind of like, I don't know. They don't think, they don't wonder. They just kind of like, you know, they just go back to sleep. And so someone with insomnia can get like a little like, oh, I just woke up again. Oh, I just woke up again. Oh, now I'm, and they might not be waking up any more than a good sleeper does. But they're just reacting to it. And it's that reaction that really causes kind of that that paradoxical insomnia that you're sleeping more than you think you are. And it just takes some time to kind of work through with education and you'll get to the point where you won't care if you wake up. You know, there's no emotional response. You're not attached to waking up at all during the night.
Yeah, you know, I think there's this type of question is very common. It's similar to like, oh, I had sleep onset insomnia. Now I have sleep maintenance insomnia. And the concern is like something has changed. Is it normal for this to change? And yes, everything is normal, actually. Everything can be explained by the gas and brake model. But it can be scary when you go from like, I think I sleep good, but I don't know. Now I have paradoxical insomnia, something is new. But paradoxical insomnia is nothing strange. It's just same as insomnia. It's just like, it's just experienced in a different way. So it's not as strange that this happens is the first answer. And it is, nothing strange or unusual with that one. And as Coach Michael says, that what helps with ordinary insomnia is the same thing that helps with paradoxical insomnia. It's just a different experience. Mm-hmm. Now, why am I so groggy? Very common one. And there are many things that go into this one. But and by the way, we want to say Hugo said that it helps to understand hyperarousal and that it can be extremely subtle. And thanks, you guys. Anytime. Thank you, Hugo. This is great question. And the grogginess. Yeah, sometimes you are tired because of the battle that you struggle so much with sleep. But sometimes it is actually a good sign, you know, because, you know, Jan says, I think I sleep better now, but I'm kind of more foggy, groggy. That could be a sign that you're less hyper aroused, less of the breaking, less hyperarousal, and that allows you to actually feel tired. Oftentimes, it could be a good sign when you're like, I'm really feeling tired now, because your body kind of allows that because the hyperarousal is fading. Mm-hmm. And then, let's see, I have to refresh my memory here. And yeah, maybe you were tired before too, but you just didn't perceive it. That could be true. Is that common? Yeah, super common. What is a natural sleeper, basically? Am I already a natural sleeper? I think when I hear that is that we often talk about natural long sleeper, natural short sleeper. And I think that's where the natural comes from. Some people naturally sleep less, some people naturally sleep longer. But other than that, there's no such thing as a natural sleeper and a not natural sleeper. So I think, yes, of course, you are a natural sleeper. Everybody is a natural sleeper, but we naturally need a little bit more and a little bit less.
Yeah, we're all different in every way,
right?
Including sleep.
Meshkat's lack. Thanks for your response. I totally agree because lots of people actually use fan. Yeah, exact. Good point. I'm worried because of the knowledge of you guys and make sure human animals can sleep with sound. Yeah, yes, humans can sleep with or without sound, 100%. And really good point. Some people actually use a fan for that sound. Mm-hmm. And maybe that could be in a weird way, like becoming accustomed to the fan sound, starting to like it and be soothing. Oh, wouldn't this be ironic? Meshka, a year from now, is like, my neighbor stopped using the fan. Now I can't sleep.
Can't sleep. I know. It's the paradox. It's like another paradox. Oh, yeah, man. It's crazy like that.
Oh, let's see here. John had actually another question or another comment that I think, again, was a very good one. Let's go over this one. May I also add, a couple of weeks ago, there were a couple of times where I lapsed into very deep sleep and then would suddenly wake with no recollection of where I was and that I was actually sleeping in my own bed. Now, recently, I had a couple of nights where I had very vivid dreams, which would wake me suddenly, also because I dreamt I was running and my heart rate would go up and I would wake with my heart slightly racing. What are these symptoms of sleep deprivation? ? For those of you who've tuned into this episode, take a minute to think about what could this be symptoms of? How can I ever get out of this cycle that I find myself in? I try to be accepting of my condition the best I could and try not to worry about sleep, but somehow it does still worry me when I get symptoms like that. When I was sleeping normally, I never had those. What can I do about them? I'm worried about the consequences of not getting enough sleep and that this will drag out into the long term and the effect might have on my health. Any ideas? Actually, I want to quickly say here that, you know, I think this was actually a comment on that Talking Insomnia episode with Michelle, who describes how what kept her from sleeping was thinking that the jerks and the jitters and the palpitations, all that stuff, was a sign of an underlying health problem. And when she realized it wasn't that really, so just listen to that episode alone could be really helpful. Like, and listen, maybe listen to it again. But other than that, I know there were a couple of questions there. Your immediate thoughts there, Michael.
Well, I guess I start with the end of the post, you know, I'm worried about not sleeping enough and how it affects my health and all that. No science showing insomnia causes any chronic problem, any acute problem, no health consequences of insomnia. And you just have to understand that. If you can find a study out there, please share it with us, because it doesn't exist. And there's really, if you think it through logically, there's no way to study it, you know, with, you know, the huge type of study you'd have to do, inducing insomnia, all this kind of stuff, and follow them for years and years. It's not possible. So just give yourself peace of mind, despite, you know, those articles you'll see about sleep and the importance of it and all that. It's always linked to or associated with, or may cause this, or it may, it's not conclusive. It's just not true. So try your best to understand that and to get that out of your mind. Insomnia doesn't cause any long-term problems. That was kind of the end. So anyways, I just wanted to share that right off the bat. Yeah. Let me think more about it if you want to jump in.
Yeah. No, I had a couple things, which was actually one kind of like just a big picture thing, is that I realized that almost all of the teaching here is about sharing that, no, this is typical, this is normal, nothing usual, this is why that happens. That is kind of like the basics of our teaching. And that again applies when you're like, okay, I was in a really deep sleep and I woke up very suddenly and I was like completely awake. Mm-hmm. I call that like a light bulb awakening. It's like somebody suddenly turned on the light, like boom. And super common. It just means that, there was some, again, hyper arousal. For those of you who were thinking about the question, it's hyper arousal when there's an automatic thought, there's a thought in your brain, you wake up randomly, which we always do. It's completely normal to wake up itself. But when you wake up, there's that thought in your brain, which is something like, you know, maybe like, it could be anything, some kind of alarming thought is in your brain. And then you're suddenly very awake. And you don't even know what that thought was that made you completely awake. But it's always some kind of automatic thought. So that is very common. Then we have the vivid dreams, which again, using the gas and brake model, is basically when you're driving a car with both gas and brake on at the same time. You know, you have this kind of, you sleep, but it's fitful, it's fragmented, and you have a lot of dreams. And the dreams come from, you know, that sleep fragmentation and the superficial sleep. It just makes you remember everything that's gone. And thoughts become kind of like dreams, and dreams become thoughts, and everything seems like a very long period of semi-wakefulness. Vivid dreams, very, very common. Nothing strange and unusual about those either.
Exactly right. It's just how you react when you wake up, you know, it's learning to not react strongly.
How do I get out of this cycle? And that's like, you know, again, that's the kind of the tricky, the paradoxical tightrope again, which is it is when you no longer try to break out of the cycle that there is no cycle anymore. It's like so paradoxical, but the more you try, like, I got to break out of the cycle, the more that cycle is going to be part of your life, you know? And again, mm-hmm. like how, and something I actually probably want to talk about next week or something is like, how do I stop worrying, or how do I stop obsessing? How to stop thinking about that? Well, that's impossible. You know, mm-hmm. you can't stop thinking about something. You can't stop worrying. It's almost like the opposite, that when you allow any thought to happen and when you allow yourself to worry, then it has less impact on you. And then you naturally worry less, you know?
Yeah. And a good amount of education helps with that.
That gets you there. Neil, jumping Neil. From the jumping analogy.
That was so funny. Yeah.
Every time I went through an episode of insomnia, it stopped when I gave up trying to solve it. Always. 100%. You know, and that goes, you know, when I hear this, I go into this one like some, you know, often I get, is this going to work or is it not going to work? But in a weird way, it's like if you have a problem and you stop thinking of it as a problem, that will always work. 100%. Yeah. Because if you don't think of it as a problem anymore, then how can it be a problem? That's kind of the same thing.
Yeah, it gets back to reaction to things. Yeah, that's true.
Ellie said, how can I get rid of self-consciousness when I get little sleep? I interpret this as self-consciousness as sort of like when I sleep very little, I start thinking about maybe how I look or how I act or how like I become self-conscious that way. I haven't had this exact question before. So if you want to expand on it, Ellie, let me know, but that's how I think about it.
Yeah.
And do you interpret it the same way, Michael?
Yeah. It's kind of like self-consciousness. So a very aware of how you're feeling and acting and looking and all of that. it could be almost anything, you know. I don't know if this is super accurate or not, but I picture like an athlete, you know, when they talk about, oh, they get in the zone and they're not thinking about anything and they're performing at their highest level. You know, it's like they're not aware of anything that they're doing. They're just, it's, I don't know how to describe it, right? They're in the zone. That's what you usually hear. But it's kind of the same idea with sleep. Is when sleep is when sleep is not focused on, you aren't aware of how it's affecting you or not. You just sleep. And it, education, I guess, I keep going back to that.
Yeah, like, that's all, education is all super
roads lead there, right?
Yeah, so. I think, okay, so let's go through this one. So Ellie says, okay, when I sleep a little, I start maybe thinking more about how I look and how I act and how I feel, become more sensual. I think more about myself. And I think that goes back to the same thing that, if you think now, okay, not only did I sleep little, that's kind of the primary attachment, if we will, then when I sleep little, I become more self-conscious. That's the secondary attachment. So when you have these two attachments, everything becomes more tricky, because now not only do you want to sleep because it's nice to sleep, you know, for that purpose, you also want to sleep to become less self-conscious. So you've now built up even more pressure to sleep, which I think Ellie can understand this, of course. And then maybe Ellie goes like, okay, it's even more pressure, but how is this going to help me? Well, firstly, yeah, it's just good to know that sometimes you have to work on the secondary attachment first. So, and that becomes like, okay, actually just knowing that if I think of sleep being something that affects my self-consciousness, that's not helpful. But more importantly, if I try to push away that, if I say like, I can't be self-conscious, I don't want to be self-conscious, and if I sleep a little, I'm going to be more self-conscious, then you see, you know, again, there's more and more pressure. So the key is always to be like, okay, so what if I'm more self-conscious? I'm going to allow myself to be more self-conscious. Mm-hmm. If I sleep little and I find myself thinking more about myself and like look at myself in the mirror and see how I look it up, that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. It's okay to be. I'm not going to judge myself. I'm not going to be hard on myself for being self-conscious. And when it becomes more acceptable for you to be self-conscious, then that secondary attachment is gone, and sleep comes much more easily. Ellie says yes, exactly, and haha. So I think we got it here.
Yeah. Thanks.
Did that make sense, Ellie? And by the way, I think Neil has in the comment too, like, do you have any problem in life? No. Then why worry? Yes. Is there something you can do about it? Yes. Then why worry? No. Then why worry?
Oh boy, Neil. I wrap my head around that one.
I think Neil has shared this one with me actually before. And it's for those of you who didn't get it that time, it's basically like, you know, do you have anything you worry about in your life? If you say no, then good for you. If you say yes, okay, well, can you do anything about that thing you worry about? Yes. Good, then do that. And no, then there's nothing you can do. That's kind of the loop of that one. It's funny. Yeah. Ellie said, thank you. That makes sense. Perfect.
Yeah. Good question, Ellie. Thanks.
Cool. So I think that was it for today. And by the way, and if anybody has comments on like, how about this one? What's best? We talked about doing retreats or workshops. I'm now leaning more towards retreat. It sounds kind of nicer than workshop. What do you think?
Like a retreat, like an actual retreat.
Let's say we do this thing where we like we have a virtual, you know, event that's happening, and it's going to be like a 2-hour thing where we discuss, let's say, the gas and brake model, and it's going to be $19. Mm-hmm. What's more appetizing? This is a workshop. The benefit with workshop is that, okay, we're going to do some work. We're going to really get practical and do stuff. But the benefit with retreat is that, oh, that sounds nice. I would like to go on a retreat. What's best, workshop or retreat?
Well, you know, the thing with retreat, and all I can do is draw on my own experience. I've done a couple of them, like, you know, in person, like overnight, you know, at a place or whatever. And the issue with that, I'll just be full honest here, is people expect, like, the night that they're there, they're going to sleep the best they've ever slept. And I was like, I can't create this performance anxiety. You know, it doesn't help. And so I kind of lean towards the workshop idea. A retreat sounds nicer. People are like, oh, I just need to retreat. Like, I need to go somewhere and just get rid of this insomnia and then come back. And it's like, okay, there's some thought work involved, and maybe not many people like completely change their thinking in like one day, right?
Exactly.
But a workshop, it's like a little more of like mm-hmm. just like kind of trying it out, you
trying
know,
it out, kind of taking thing. One step. Yeah,
that's just my thoughts. I don't know.
I think I like that. We'll
pencil it, right? You know, a workshop it on the flow and that kind of thing. But like a workshop, I was like, oh, you know, we're gonna be doing some things here. So I see both sides of it. So
I think you made a strong case for a workshop here. But anyway,
I want to know. I want to know what Jamie thinks. She'll know.
And actually, all in the audience too. Like, if you think what's best, workshop or retreat, leave a comment. That would be great.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll end it there. Thanks, everyone. Talk soon, Michael.
Great questions, everybody. Thanks.